Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly, but 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with questions, concerns, or comments. And Mr. Kelly, it sounds like you have a cough.
A little bit.
Oh.
Yeah, a little bit. But, yeah, just kind of happens every now and then.
Right. Especially with this weather.
Yeah.
I mean, good grief. What was it, 2 days ago? It was 106, you know.
Uh-huh. Basically. And now it's... Yeah, last Saturday I had a frog in my throat and could not get it out for like 2 hours.
Really?
It was a real struggle. But usually it goes away pretty quickly. But you get old. Actually, what happened years ago, I did traffic in Kansas City, and I did it for like 12 stations or something. And for 3 hours every morning, basically, the longest break I had was 2 minutes between reports.
No way.
And my voice went through like a second puberty. I swear to God, it started breaking again, and it was a mess. And so I kind of blamed that because it strained it quite a bit. But it was funny. I was, here I am 30 years old or whatever. Voice is changing like a teenager. So, but yeah.
Thanks to the weather for that.
It also paid to have a good bladder back then.
Yes. Well, thanks.
You're
please,
welcome.
No,
I think
don't leave any more cough drops on my desk.
You didn't like that?
No.
Oh, you could have had it.
I know.
Oh, okay.
Folks, it is Saturday morning. We get together and we'll have a discussion about what's going on in your landscape. How about your house plants? How are they doing? They got another couple months or so. Realize, I mean, summer's only one third over. Well, it's a little bit more than one third, but being in the last day in July, it's wow. You always think summer is coming to an end, but nope, summer goes all the way to September 22nd. And what's going on? Let me share my thoughts, ideas, and everything, and you can take what I'm saying and see if you can use that to solidify your options with that final judgment, obviously, on your shoulders. And, this is your show. I certainly appreciate you inviting me into your home, car, wherever you happen to be listening. Another very important player is Alex. He's producing, so he pushes all the buttons and answers the phone. If you do call with a question, comment, or concern, just your first name and where you're calling from is all he needs. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994, and I can come to your home and do landscape consultations if you like, and I call it a walk and talk. If you'd like for me to come to your home, you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number where I can be reached. Well, let's get moving. Today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting. Wow. When I stepped out of the house to go over to the car, that breeze was unbelievable this morning. And then I drove and I drove and I drove, not that far, really. But when I stepped out of the car, such a cool breeze. It was great. Crickets were singing, birds were swooping, branches were bouncing, and a sign says, thanks for letting us grow. And what this is, please use, and then also it says, please use Playscape Entrance. It's a newer development in Forest Park, and it runs really from the kind of the boathouse all the way up the hill and then down around the other side. Areas that had not been developed ever since the beginning, I guess. Maybe it was at one time, but you know, nothing that I know of. It goes past the World's Fair Pavilion. In specific areas, there's a map there. There's actually drinking fountains in Forest Park that are functional. So that's kind of surprising. I didn't know any kind of drinking fountains were still being used. But there's things like a sensory garden. There's a meadow. There's some mounds. There's a spring wetland. There's a gravel bank, a young forest, a bottomland forest, and much more. The plantings are just absolutely fantastic. In the seating area, there are all kinds of seating. And some of the seating are just large boulders that are sitting there. And I don't know what it's like to kind of sit on a boulder for an extended period of time, but it could be kind of interesting. But right now, the Sunflower family really dominates, with milkweed rising high upward. And there's already bees out there, you know, checking out, getting pollen, and heading back to the hive or wherever they're planning on going. The gravel pathway leads all the way, sweeps all the way downhill. It's really kind of neat to see. And some of it's connected. Well, all of it's connected, but some of it's connected in obvious, you know, situations. There's ornamental grasses, which, you know, mingle with some of the showier perennials like blue delphiniums and spiderworts. The coolness was really unbelievable this morning on this July 31st, 2021, the last day of July for this year. So if you have questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We'll be back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, just realized that newly installed plants and shrubs should be watered, but I've been getting quite a few, let's say, pictures from people sending me emails and wondering what's going on, because one of their newly installed shrubs or trees is really wilting badly. So what they've been doing, and I immediately say stop watering, is they're running a trickle of water every day for an hour or so. And probably what's already happened is root system has completely been rotted out, and there's not going to be a recovery for this, but it is just amazing. So you have to be careful. Just because something is wilting, realize what time, you know, what the temperature is, what time of day it is, and everything else. If it's wilted in the morning, then it definitely needs probably water. But if it's just wilted in the heat of the day, that doesn't make, you know, that doesn't say that it needs watering. So a lot of times people think, well, if it's wilted, it needs water. No, that's not necessarily always the case. So just be really, really careful about that, especially with new things that have been installed this year. Other things that you need to be thinking about is keep deadheading your annuals and perennials, because it's going to help just the overall health. And with the annuals, it's probably going to encourage a new flush and blooms to come back. So, and if you do have roses, no fertilizer on your roses after August 15th. Let's head out to the phones now, and let's go over to Kim's yard. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Hi.
First of all, thank you. I've never heard your show before, so this is the first time.
Yeah.
We're really having trouble with our yard. We live out in Defiance, and have never done like have a company come out and spray, but our yard is crammed full with clover. And I was wondering if you could suggest anything that we could do versus having a professional come in. And then also, I'm still having trouble with Japanese beetles, and they're eating my mandevilla to death. I'm not sure. I've got two traps out, but they're still, it's like they went, oh, we could have flowers instead of traps. Let's do that. And it's like they've outsmarted me. So clover and Japanese beetles.
Yeah, with the Japanese beetles, it's pretty much using the insecticidal soap, and you're going to have to go after them, you know, individually. And some people discourage people from putting out the traps because they say it kind of brings them in.
I thought so too.
Yeah, and so that kind of I mean, it is effective because you can, you know, once the trap, they're, let's say, drawn to that particular trap, but they're not necessarily going to be drawn to the trap. They're drawn to the plant material as well. So I would say get rid of the traps and just kind of keep your fingers crossed on the amount of damage that's going to be done. And clover, if you have an extended, you know, massive amount of clover, it's going to take a professional service, and it's not going to just happen in one season or, you know, one time during one season. It's going to take a couple years to get rid of the entire problem.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's not going to be just a one shot where you're going to call a company, they're going to come out, they're going to spray, and the clover is going to be gone.
Okay.
So it's
wow. Okay,
it's very
then we
tough
better
stuff.
Get on it. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, and then after you get the clover taken care of, then you got big bare areas, and then you got to reestablish a type of lawn there. So do some research. First of all, I'd probably go ahead and, you know, in preparation for all this, is to get a soil test done. You can go to the, you know, County Extension Service and get this, you know, take a soil, or go online, find out how to take a soil sample, get a soil test done to find out what's going on in your soil nutrient-wise, because there's been some people that have had some soil tests done that, you know, they've had real problems with their lawns, and consequently, they've had extravagant levels of potassium, phosphorus, calcium, and some of the other nutrients, and that's been what has sort of weakened their lawn in general and made it so there's been other problems as a result of it. So just it's just part of the big picture.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yes. I appreciate that.
Sure. And so it's, I mean, it's a tough one. And to get rid of, eradicate any kind of problem that's a major, let's say, area is going to be tough. No getting around it.
Okay. One year it was so bad that we actually thought about using the tractor and just digging up the yard and starting over again. And so now what I hear you saying is it probably wouldn't have done any good.
No, probably wouldn't have. Because you don't eradicate the problem. A lot of times, you know, plowing things under, a lot of times certain farmers will grow clover in fields and then turn that in because it is actually helps with the nutrients as far as maintaining nitrogen in the soil.
That's what my husband said. He's like, oh, we'll just let it grow because it'll add nitrogen to the soil.
Right.
And it's like, okay, it's getting worse every year. It's not getting any better.
Well, you can just say, you know, fine. It's clover, and you get the white flowers, and so that's kind of how it is.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure. And 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 if you have questions, concerns, or comments about your plant material. Let's head over to Tony's yard now. Hi, Tony.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Hey, I have a question on landscaping around existing trees. We built a new house last fall, and we did most of our backfill. And we have a tree that's about 12 inches in diameter in the trunk. And I stayed back about 9 feet all the way around that tree. In order to finish up the landscaping, I would have to add about 9 inches of backfill to that tree to make everything level. And I know that filling in that much dirt would probably kill that tree. And I was wondering what you would recommend how to do that, how to finish that off.
Yeah, basically, you're absolutely right. You cannot pile soil of any type up on the trunk because then that causes bark rot and that causes just sort of a slow, depreciation of tree quality and everything else. So don't do that. There's not really too much you can do other than, you know, leaving the grade as it is and then either just putting mulch around it and just understand that where you have added that elevation of, you know, more soil, it's going to taper into where you've put the mulch in, and wait until that actually happens, and then you can define the space with an edger or something along that line.
What would you think about landscaping rock? Putting like maybe 3-inch riprap down first and then 2 to 4 inches of landscaping rock just to make everything level with the rest of my yard.
That would be fine.
Is that too much?
No, that's fine. The rock is fine. It's just you can't pile soil up against the trunk of a tree. But the rock is fine. Regular mulch is fine. And ultimately, if you do the rock, I mean, you might be able to get, you know, some classic type ground covers to grow around the trunk, too. Things like liriope or ivies or periwinkle. But initially, I think the rock is probably the best approach because you're probably going to have weed problems and things like that.
Okay. Yeah, because I would have to fill in about 9 inches of total in order to make everything level with the rest of my yard.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. But you think rock would be okay?
Sure. Yeah, so it shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. How about mulch that thick? Is that okay too yet, or is that too thick?
Well, it's, you know, you're getting pretty thick when you get it, like, you know, that deep. And so just so you're not piling, even the mulch piled up against the trunk of a tree, generally they say the best thing to do with the mulch around trees is kind of create a bagel. So in other words, a hole right up next to the trunk so that even the mulch, as well drained as it is and everything else, won't hold too much moisture next to the bark.
Okay. Well, one of my concerns with mulch is mulch turns to dirt after years of decaying.
Sure.
And pretty soon I'll have 9 inches of dirt there, correct?
Yeah, but it'll be a while. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. It does biodegrade.
Yeah. Okay. Well, sounds like my best option might be rock.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Sure. You do the same thing. Yeah, you've got a really difficult situation. If you've got a grade change of 9 inches, that is extreme. Let's head over to Dave's yard. Hi, Dave.
Hi. quick question. This spring I bought 4 sumac trees, hoping for the red berries, and I found out 3 were male and 1 was female. Is it possible to graft a female branch onto a male sumac tree?
Yeah, it probably is possible, but it's probably too crazy to attempt. You're better off just to buy some other ones.
I guess go to a nursery, the local tree grower.
Right, exactly. So,
okay.
It's going to be several years before you're going to get the berries anyway, but just understand.
Oh, it will.
Yeah, you're not going to get it immediately by any means. The plants have to get themselves established and the pollination has to occur, so it's going to be a little while.
Okay, that answers my question. I guess I'll buy some different trees. Thanks.
Yeah, a lot of times, okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, you don't know, and you're going into a situation or a circumstance, and the people that you're buying the plant material from, they should be informing you that this is what you tell them that this is what I'm trying to achieve, and they say, well, you only need 1 male and 3 females in this situation,
yeah. Well,
not the other way around.
I didn't spend much on them. It's a local guy that just grows trees. He's a retired school teacher, and that's what he does.
Oh, great.
So I don't have a lot of money in him. But it didn't achieve what my wife wanted, so I guess it's buy more trees.
Right, exactly. And, yeah, it's you know, it's just kind of a tough, you know, tough circumstance or a tough, you know, situation for you.
Yeah, because we saw a bluebird eating on the berries this last winter, so that's what we wanted.
Right.
But it's not going to happen this year.
No, probably, I would say, like 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
So just be patient.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah, it's nice to buy, you know, from somebody that's local that's growing the plant material themselves and, you know, not necessarily big production. But doing the research ahead of time, I don't know how, you know, suddenly if he told you maybe that they were male and female and you just didn't pay that much attention to it or exactly what was going on with that. But you always, when you have cross-pollination from plants that are separate, male and female, you always want way more females than you want a male, because males produce pollen, and they can pollinate lots of different plant material, and the females, they have to get the, you know, they have to be cross-pollinated to be able to set any kind of flower / fruit. So let's head over to Rob's yard. Hi, Rob. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. How are you?
Very good.
Good. We have a semi-finished basement, and we have a couple of plants in the basement in the living section. And the house has a number of regular spiders, and I've been finding what I believe are spider mites in the plants that are in the basement. So I guess I have 2 questions. I'm guessing that the spider mites are likely a result of also a good environment for spiders in the basement in general? Can you answer that? And then secondly, what kind of recommendations would you have not only for treating the current spider mite problem, but preventing future spider mite infestations?
Well, first of all, spiders and spider mites, yes, they're cousins to each other. But generally, spider mites are only going to be problematic as if you brought the spider mites in with your plant material. So in other words, if they were clean, they didn't have any spider mites, and they were in your basement, there's no way that they could be could have gotten spider mites since you brought them in, if they were free of the spider mite problem. There are miticides. Yeah. Now, are you sure they're spider mites? Because spider mite webbing is like really kind of small, and it goes in between like the stem and the leaf or things like that.
Yeah. So there's in the house plants in the finished part of the basement, there's definitely webbing. And as I look on the underside of some of the leaves, I can see some little look like spiders, almost like tick sized spiders, I guess, kind of crawling around. So looking up on the internet, it looks like that's what it is.
Well, spider mites are tiny. They're microscopic almost. I'll tell you what, take a white napkin or a piece of paper or something like that. Hold it underneath a branch where you think there are spider mites there, and then tap it, and it should knock the spider mites off down onto the paper, and then you can see if there are red spider mites running around, because that's a way to check to be sure that you have spider mites. And if
I'm pretty certain about that. So as far as treatment and prevention, now that they are there, what would you recommend?
You're probably going to have to use an insecticide, and you have to use one specifically for mites. So in other words, a miticide.
Okay. That sounds great. Thank you so much for your help. I appreciate it.
Sure. And I mean, if you want to try an insecticidal soap first, because it's a little bit more organically oriented, you could try that. But generally, it is not really all that effective against the spider mites.
Yeah, I've seen they're pretty troublesome. So I'll take your advice. Anything I can do to try to get rid of them. The wife does not appreciate the appearance of the spider webs in her beautiful babies.
Right. And, you know where they are, so make sure you spray the underside of the leaves, not just on the top of the leaves.
Yeah, that sounds good. Thank you so much. Appreciate the time.
My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. If you have questions, concerns, or comments, we got open lines, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones. Let's head over to Dan's yard. Hi, Dan. How are you? Hello, Dan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We just recently bought two Cherry Canada Red trees that were about 8 foot tall from a reputable nursery and planted them, and they have holes in the leaves probably the size of a pencil eraser. Some of the leaves, not all the leaves, but just curious as what how we should treat that or be concerned about it.
To be honest, with this late in the season, which it isn't really late in the season, but I wouldn't be overly concerned with it. I would just, monitor and watch closely to see if you can find out what the holes were, what created the holes. It might be Japanese beetles. It could be who knows what. And just watch the underside of the leaf and watch early or take a look earlier in the morning, not in the heat of the day or things like that. But for the most part, unless you actually see the insect, there's not really too much you can do at this particular point. And so consequently, if you do see an insect, maybe get some insecticidal soap and spray it directly onto whatever kind of bug that you see on the foliage of your plants.
Okay. Is it advisable to water them every day?
No, definitely not.
No.
I mean, for the first week or so, yes, as a transition. But if you've had them longer than a week or two, then definitely don't do that. You should be able to, just make sure that they get an inch of water, either irrigated, through your hose, irrigation system or whatever, or rainfall, and that should be adequate.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks, Dan. And let's go now over to John. And John lives in South County. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a holly tree that's probably, I don't know, very old at any rate, and the leaves are not as bright yellow, bright as green as they used to be. What do I put on there? Some people said put sulfur down. Somebody put iron down. Is there something that can put down to get that green back again?
Yeah,
the tree's very healthy.
Yeah, it's going to take a while to get it, you know, back to green, especially if it's a larger, mature one. But you need iron sulfate. Sulfur changes the soil pH, so then the basically the holly can recognize the iron and absorb that as well. So your sulfur treats the soil, or treats the soil, and the iron actually is going to help change the color on your holly. But it is
okay,
not gonna,
iron sulfate.
Right. So it's not going to happen, you know, over probably, again, depending upon how mature it is, it could take 2 or 3 years. So just read the label on application, when the best time is and everything else, and apply it, you know, but not
okay,
right
then do you put it on annually or just one time?
No, you're going to have to put it on probably a couple different times. So in other words, your soil pH, this holly's probably up close to your house or next to a sidewalk or driveway or something like that, which is alkaline just from its chemistry. So you're counteracting what there is there.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, my pleasure. Yeah, not only that, you know, your holly, but many houses that I've been to recently, all the lots, I shouldn't say all, but many of the broadleaf evergreens are showing some problems. The only one that doesn't seem to show the problem from the, let's say, soil pH problem, so in other words, too alkaline, too salty versus too much like vinegar, evergreens really want to have a soil that's really vinegar, acidic. And that's what you're trying to create and, you know, maintain. But I don't see boxwood having too much of a problem. But most of the other broadleaf evergreens, maybe not the leatherleaf viburnum, but the majority of them do have some problems with the, you know, the soil pH. So the azaleas, rhododendrons, hollies, those are probably the ones that are most pronounced. Let's head over to Dee Dee's yard. Hi, Dee Dee.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
My kids gave me a young oak tree from Arbor Day or Earth Day about 5 years ago. It's about 12 to 15 feet. It Ooh. Looks healthy, but I could see a one inch ball by the leaf, and I know it's not a gall because unfortunately I have pin oaks that have those. but this ball is about 1 inch in diameter and looks like one of those kids' balls with the small suction cups covering it. And it's light green in color on the stem near the leaf. I didn't know what that was or if I should cut it off or if it's a seed pod. I don't know.
Well, if it's an oak, it's going to be an acorn-looking thing. So this doesn't sound like an acorn. This sounds like some kind of growth that you don't want to have on there. So I just go ahead and cut it off.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I know.
Well,
you know,
thank
from
you.
Your description, I can't exactly tell what it is, but it doesn't sound like something that's going to be to the positive
beneficial
aspect,
huh,
of the tree.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And now let's head from Dee Dee's to Larry's yard. Hi, Larry.
How you doing, Mike?
Good. Very good.
Hey, I got three questions. One's my knockout roses isn't doing very good this year, and I put that 7 on it to keep the mites away. Second question, we planted hollyhocks, and out of 6, 5 came up, but they've never, they're just green. Nothing's happened. And then one last question, when I'm sowing grass seed, what is the very best cover besides straw to ensure it's going to come up quicker? I've been using some composted material that I've been, I'd probably had that for 6-7 years, and it's almost turned into dirt. What do you think?
Basically, compost is a good one to top dress any kind of, if you're putting down new new seed, you only want it to be about a quarter to a half inch. And really, you should probably core aerate your lawn area before you even put the seed down. That's going to be to the advantage of your lawn in general. With your hollyhocks, you basically, hollyhocks are biennials. So in other words, the first year, they generally just grow green. The second year, they will grow green and flower, and then they will die. And then, you know, they've come back up from, you know, seeds or whatever else is, you know.
Well, they only come up every other year?
As far as flowering goes, yes.
Yeah, I'll be done.
So
be done.
If you want to have some that flowers consistently, just buy some, you know, 2 or 3 years in a row, and then that way you won't know, you won't be able to pay attention to which ones are not flowering and which ones are.
All right, and then what about the knockout roses? Is this a bad year for them or what?
Not necessarily. I mean, some of them have been really striking, but, you know, make sure just putting, you said you put Spectracide on them, or what did you
say? No, seven.
Seven. Well, seven, you know, doesn't it? If you're not fertilizing them and taking care of them beyond just worrying about situation controlling insects, then you're kind of missing the boat that you have to have. You'll be fertilized almost monthly, starting in, let's say, as soon as the new growth begins and the leaves are starting merging. You know, weather dependent, it's going to be about mid-April. So you're going to fertilize mid-April, mid-May, mid-June, mid-July. And then the last fertilizing is going to be mid-August.
I'll be darned. So what kind of fertilizer do you recommend for that? Fertilone?
Yeah, well, just so make sure it says it's rose food. Because it's going to have some nutrients that the others, you know, don't necessarily, regular fertilizer may not have.
Okay, Mike. Hey, thanks for your help, buddy.
Sure. My pleasure.
All right.
And now let's go over to Dave's yard. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I'm having problems with the health of my lawn, and I think I heard you earlier today say something about people having high phosphorus and potassium in their lawns was problematic. And I've had a soil test, and I have that. Did I hear that right?
Yes, you did. So extreme levels of phosphorus, potassium, and a few other of the nutrients that are in the fertilizers can be detrimental to the overall health, and it just weakens your lawn, and that makes it more prone to fungus problems, more prone to invasion of weeds and other, you know, troubles.
What can I do to correct that?
It's really, I mean, once you've got it in there, there's not really, because that stuff just sticks for a long time. Just make sure that if you do, you know, go back, if you're going to do some overseeding this, let's say this late August, early September, that you, any kind of seed starter fertilizer or anything, just make sure the last two numbers on the bag of fertilizer are really low. So in other words, like 10-0-0 or something along that line. You can't get rid of the phosphorus and potassium, you know, out of the soil. It's got to work its way out. You know, nutrient like nitrogen becomes a gas and just goes up into the air. But this stuff just stays and stays and stays.
Huh. I've overdone it, I guess.
Yes. A lot of times, people feel like they, you know, if they fertilize and they're using the same fertilizer without any kind of thought of what kind of buildup it's creating in the soil, then it really, you're creating more of a problem than you're doing for anything for good.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Sure. My pleasure. Yeah, it's going to be a long, involved process. Probably core aeration would be the thing, followed by, you know, composting, then put some seed down and try to get some, you know, some new growth going. But good luck with that whole thing. It's not an easy process.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. Mike Biller, KMOX Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, let's head over to Larry's yard. Larry, how are you today?
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Previous shows, you said that you plant cannas in pots.
Yes.
And I'd like to ask you, Mike, how often do you have to replace the bulbs to ensure you have good blooms year after year?
Basically, I dig them up and I take them inside and put them in the basement during the wintertime. So, but pretty much, you know, they keep growing and growing. I can't really say, you know, there's a couple of them exotic. I have Canna Tropicana, which is the one that has more or less the yellowish leaf with green stripes in it. That one doesn't seem to flower. I just grow that one mainly for the foliage. But the other ones that I grow seem to not have a problem at all. As far as I have like the dark kind of reddish maroon foliaged one, and then just the regular green ones too. I don't put them all out every year. I just kind of alternate. But
okay. So you're saying they'll last for at least 6 or 7 years?
Right. Yes.
All right. Same thing with black-eyed Susans. How often would you recommend replacing the black-eyed Susans to ensure you have good blooming?
Basically, they should just leave them alone and let them self-seed. Whether it be purple coneflower, black-eyed Susan, I mean the finches love them too. So it's you don't really need to replant new varieties of the plant, because the seeds are going to drop and grow are going to be new plants in and of themselves.
All right. Now, if you have some seeds left over, as far as annual seeds, like zinnia seeds, any recommendations as far as storing seeds over the winter?
Basically, just in a paper bag and just, don't let them get wet or anything. That's pretty much all you need to do.
Very well. Okay, thank you. Have a good weekend.
Have a good one yourself. And now let's see, why don't we go over to Bob, and Bob lives in O'Fallon. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Mike. I want to know, when is the right time to attack red thread, and what is the good seed or grass that's not susceptible as readily as to red threads?
So basically, with any kind of problem like you're talking about, as soon as you see it, and if you know you have a history of it, watch everything extremely closely and then go after it.
When it appears or ahead of time?
No. Generally, you have to kind of wait till it appears, because preventative type thing is really not all that effective. And so, but stay on top of it and don't just kind of like, I put one thing application down. If you've got that kind of problem, which is a major problem, and it's not really all that common, just stay on top of it and go to your favorite garden center, tell them that you have this, and let them recommend a fungicide that's going to be specifically for that problem.
Good. Okay. It seems to be in my yard only, but it's there because it's there.
Wow.
So is there a seed or grass that is not so susceptible to red thread?
Generally, the K31, which is the kind of the rough fescue. It's more or less a cousin to the native fescue grasses. That would be probably the one that would be the toughest.
Wow. I always figured K31 was a pasture grass.
Well, it is, basically, but you can use it as a lawn. You can use the fescue blends, but it is by far the toughest of all the varieties of grasses that can be grown as lawns.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll watch for it again. It's every spring it pops up.
Wow.
So, yeah. All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Sure. My pleasure. Yeah, that's kind of a rarity that have that problem. Let's see. Can you do it really quickly? Carolyn?
Hello?
Can you do it quick?
Yes. I have wild violets in my lawn, and they seem to be taking over. And I do have a few cedar trees also. I don't know if they're more around the cedar trees, and then they're spreading.
Violets are a really difficult weed to get under control, and it's going to take multiple years to finally get rid of them. So just realize that you're not going to get rid of them in one circumstance. Go to your favorite garden center and tell them you have the violets. Let them recommend what kind of herbicide that they have to get them under control. And like I said, it has nothing to do with the cedar trees or anything else. It's just once they get established, they're rampant because they produce seed from the flower. And also there's a little seed nodule right basically where the crown goes into the ground that releases seed. So they're ferocious. There's no getting around it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. It's an unfortunate thing. I mean, my wife loves them, so we have some, certain areas, certain bed spaces that I just let them go so she can enjoy the violets. But for the most part, I've been working on it for a couple years to finally get, I've hand dug them, I've, used herbicides on them both, and so I just kind of keep working on them. And then, of course, some can be invasive for other reasons, either, you know, the neighbors or wherever else. And but it is, you know, it is a problem. There's no getting around it. So if you do have any questions, concerns, or comments, you can give us a call and you can get online. Not online, get in line, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Basically, you've got until, if you want to plant some, let's say, cool season vegetables like lettuce, cabbage, radishes, broccoli, cauliflower, spinach, and turnips, you got to wait until late August to put those seeds down. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after the news.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, it is the Garden Hotline, tip of the trial hour, and I'll be giving that shortly. But right now, you can give us a call at 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. And Mr. Kelly,
yes,
how about the bird population?
Oh, going great.
Really?
Yeah. Well, the hummingbirds, a lot of the other birds are out doing their own thing right now. We've got several cardinals, sparrows, things along those lines. Haven't seen as many of the red-breasted woodpeckers. The red-headed woodpeckers haven't had in a little while. We still do see the downy woodpeckers okay. pretty often. But the hummingbirds are going nuts.
Really?
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
I haven't seen one in a couple weeks now.
Really?
For some reason.
Yeah, we've been trying to guess how many. And the one feeder we have says if it's basically an ounce to a hummingbird. Well, it's 32 ounces. And it gets emptied about every day. We've got another one that's twice as big that gets emptied every other day, and then two others that are about half that size, and another one that's smaller. So based on what we were figuring, we've got like 300. That can't be right. But we have a lot.
Right.
And I think now they're going to start storing up, getting ready for their travel in September.
Sure.
But, yeah, they are going nuts, and it's so much
fantastic.
Fun to watch them.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
I had one the other day go right under my chin. Right there. It was like, oh, okay, I felt that. I trust them to miss me, and so far it's worked.
All right, well, yes. Great. Well, thanks, Brian.
You bet.
Yes, and thanks for having me on your show. We can discuss plant selection, cares for, annuals. And one question before you take off, Mr. Kelly.
Yo.
Speaking of annuals, how's your pansies? Are they still doing okay?
They're still doing okay.
Really?
And then what's that one plant that's the real pretty one that's purple and pink? That, like, it comes over, it hangs over, and it's got those bulbs that kind of look like Rover.
Fuchsia?
Yes. Even better than last. Remember I showed you the pictures
yeah,
last week?
Right.
Like, half of it was still going?
Right.
Now the whole thing is starting to bud out a little bit.
Wow. Great.
I know. We're so happy about it. That's the best thing that's happened all summer.
Well, great.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you can take off. How about your bulbs, your edibles, your ground cover, your houseplants, your lawn, perennials, roses, tree shrub, or fuchsia? I shouldn't have said fuchsia. It's fuchsia. So anyway, enough of that. And I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinion is not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered for you to consider. Across the big board is Alex. He's producing, so he answers the phone. So he'll just need your first number and where you're calling from. During the week and on weekends, I do landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. If you'd like for me to come to your home and do a walk and talk, you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. And that's where my email and phone number is. And you can contact me and we'll figure out a time when I can come over and share my 40-plus years of experience in the outdoors with you and your landscape. Tip of the Trial is a special recognition for individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me and is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Basically, a gentleman who grew up in actually close by Jacksonville, Illinois, on a farm, he now lives in Knoxville, Tennessee. He sent me some pictures. We were talking, it was either last week or 2 weeks ago, about the cicadas and the number of cicadas and things like that. He sent me pictures of cicadas in his property in Knoxville. It was freaky, incredible. And I remember, you know, growing up in Maple Lane in Ellisville, when the cicadas would come, we would, you know, take the exoskeletons and hang them on our shirts and act like we were being eaten by monster bugs and everything else. And then we'd also collect some in a jar just to, you know, put in our bedrooms. But it's the amount of cicadas that were there was just absolutely unbelievable. And the flagging is the tip of the branch will die because of the cicadas hatching as a result of, you know, the female laying the eggs there. So a tip of the trowel goes out to that gentleman. And also, you know, it's been really, really hot. And it's so nice and cool today. Well, hot. Think of something cool like today. How about spring flowering bulbs? Brightside St. Louis is now offering their bulbs, their spring bulbs that you would be buying now, planting in the fall that will be blooming next year. They've got the exclusive Brightside Red Hybrids. That's a Darwin-type tulip. And they've got all kinds of daffodils and everything else as well. So with the daffodils, they have the Carlton, the Barrett Browning, Pink Charm, Slim Whitman, and several others as well. So Greater St. Louis Daffodil Society, those are the ones that they really have picked, you know, for Brightside St. Louis to, you know, to have and to carry. And so basically you can order now. So if you get a little bit just worn out by the heat and everything else, sit back and think cool and calm and everything else and get your spring flowering bulbs from Brightside St. Louis. You can go to their website and print out an order form and mail it in, or you can call the Brightside office at 314-772-4646 and place your order over the phone. I always place, you know, I usually just call mine in, and consequently, I have them shipped to me. So, but you can pick them up. There's a greenhouse right along greenhouse series along Highway 40 there in Forest Park, and that's where you can stop and pick up your bulbs, you know, when they arrive. So you can do it either way. I just have mine delivered because it's just a little bit easier for me. But anyway, a tip of the trowel goes out to Brightside St. Louis for all the great things they do for the entire region, but especially this time of year when we just get all so worn out by the heat and everything else, then you can just kind of sit back and think, ah, daffodils and tulips, oh, I can't wait. And then you get to plant them later on, and when the weather has cooled down, obviously, and then you get to just leave them alone. And if you prepare the soil correctly and everything else, then you're going to be unbelievably overwhelmed by how spectacular they are. I've been probably getting bulbs from them for, I don't know how many years, multiple years. And most of mine, to be honest with you, I treat some as perennials, but most of them I just kind of treat as annuals because I have them in pots and things like that. And so I just get new ones every year. So anyway, Brightside St. Louis, if you're interested in getting the bulbs, 314-772-4646, or check out their website, Brightside St. Louis, BrightsideSTL.com or .org. I don't have the exact address. How dumb can I possibly be? Anyway, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, let's go to Joni's. And Joni, how are you today?
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
I have a house plant issue. I bought a fiddle leaf fig tree, a baby one, at a local grocery store, and it's growing great. It's 3 feet tall now, but it's just one straight single stem.
Right.
How am I going to get branches to form?
Basically, you're not.
Oh.
I mean, you can, but for the most part, when you see fiddle leaf figs, they're a single stalk with their giant, you know, the giant green leaves, and that's pretty much it. So you're not going to get any kind of tree shape like out of the other fig trees, like the, you know, any of them, you know. But the fiddle leaf fig just seems to have a single stalk for the most part.
Huh. Well, I guess that's just the way it's going to be then, huh?
Right. I mean, you could try to cut it, you know, cut out, you know, cut out the top of it off and see if you get some branching coming off the trunk, the main stem. Uh-huh. But it's likely not going to happen.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, they're kind of cool, you know, from the fact the size of the leaf and everything else. But aesthetically, they do, let's say, lack a little bit of the drama because they're so straight up. But the leaves add that nice touch.
I see. Okay, thanks.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go to Suzanne's yard. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, Mike. My dad has a Japanese maple, and I've been doing work in his yard all summer. And I noticed, I'm not sure when, I guess it was in early June, that it was losing leaves a few at a time. And at the end of June, I went out and bought some fertilizer spikes, about 15 of them, and put them around the drip line. And it's still losing a few leaves here and there. It's been very gradual, but I would say that about half of the leaves of the tree are missing. There's some clearly dead branches on it. Is my tree going to bounce back next year?
Probably the branches that have no foliage on them right now, I would say those are not going to have foliage on them in the future.
And okay, so those I can cut off.
Right. And fertilizing, you know, June is, you know, a good time. Summertime's a good time for beeches, maples, and birch trees to be fertilized. But, you know, using the spikes that you talked about, it's going to take a couple years for those to melt down to be able to be, let's say, absorbed through and within the soil, and then for the tree root system to pull them back up. So it's okay. Going to be, the impact is going to be rather slow.
Okay. So just take a wait-and-see approach and have the dead branches removed.
Right. And basically, how old is this, an older one, or is this real?
I don't know. My mom planted it, and I'm guessing it's probably about 30 years old.
Well, it could
be the lifespan of one of those.
Yeah, you're looking at pretty much, I don't want to say the end of its life, but that's pretty old for the Japanese maples. Now, is this the one that looks like an umbrella, or is this one just a regular upright one?
It's the regular upright.
Yeah. So still it's got a, you know, somewhat of a limited factor when you start hitting, you know, triple digits, or not triple digits, but, you know, three decades.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Getting old.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
And then also, you know, in a situation like that, you know, over that time, I don't know if there's other trees that are close by or anything else, like larger trees, the oaks or maples or, you know, hawthorns or whatever. Hawthorn's not a major tree, but anyway, hackberries or anything else that could compete with the root system, that's going to limit the longevity factor as well. Let's go now to North County and go into Don's yard. Hi, Don.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
After your discussion on the cicadas, I thought you might be related to Gary Larson of The Far Side as a kid. I've got a forsythia, and I've also got a pin oak, and the forsythia all of a sudden has started to develop galls. I was out clipping yesterday, and I noticed some galls on there on my forsythia.
Hmm.
Is that normal, or is that wild, or what?
Yeah, no, that's not something normal, but I'm sure it's not the same kind of galls that you know, are impacting the oak trees.
No, it isn't. It's a different kind of gall, but
right.
I was trying to cut them apart, and I'm sure the squirrels will get in there and eat the galls on there too. That my poor pin oak has about had it, and I'm trying to stretch it as long as I can.
Right,
but not normal for a forsythia.
No, not that I'm, you know, not that I've actually experienced myself over all the years I've been playing in the outdoors.
Okay, well, if I find another one, I'll cut it off and send it to you.
Okay, sounds good. Send a picture, and I can take a look at it and see if I can figure out what it is.
Okay. Thanks a bunch.
Sure, my pleasure.
Have a great day.
Yep, you too. And now let's go to South City, and that's where Bob lives. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Mike. If you don't mind, I've got two questions and a comment.
Okay.
First question is on peony plants. We've got two different bunches in our yard. Now, the one bunch has started or has got white stuff on the leaves, the top of the leaf surface. It doesn't rub off and doesn't seem to be bothering the plant, but it's just unusual.
Well, it's truly, it's not unusual. Peonies are one of the plants that get this powdery mildew. Lilacs are several different plants, and it's an aesthetic of zinnias get them as well on the foliage, and it's really an aesthetic thing. It doesn't really affect the overall health of the peony. But basically, at the end of the season, when you cut the foliage, just get the foliage off. Don't just cut it and let it drop where you've cut it.
Okay. Now, my second question on knockout roses, when is a good time to move them?
Do you know where you're going to move it to?
Yeah, my wife's got a good idea where she wants to put them.
Okay, I would get that soil prepared, and then you probably have all the way from, let's say, mid to late August, all the way until mid to late September to get it moved.
Okay. On my comment, last hour a guy called about storing seeds, and I just want to let him know, my wife has stored seeds, flower and vegetable both, for years, in the door of our refrigerator up where that little compartment is where you normally put butter.
Oh, really?
She's put them up there, and we have found packets of seeds, vegetable seeds, that were like 3-4 years old, and she'll look at them and say, I'm going to throw them away, and I tell her to plant them, and they usually grow.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. Well,
so I just wanted to let him know she's been doing this for years.
She's a master.
She's got a green thumb. Both of her thumbs are green.
Well, great. Yeah, I've never heard of storing them in refrigerators, but that certainly, if it works, it works.
But I thank you for your time. Have
sure.
a good day.
My pleasure. And now let's go to Joe's yard, and Joe lives in Afton. Hi, Joe.
Yes, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a comment on that last call. I've been storing mine on the refrigerator door for many, many years, the vegetable seeds, and then
really?
Planting year after year.
That's perfect.
All right, my question is, the best time to transplant 2 to 3 foot tall bleeding hearts?
Probably the best time to do that, I would get it, if you're going to do it, if you feel like you know where you're going to go with them, you get the soil prepared and everything else. The end of summer, early fall is a good time to do it. If you're a little bit concerned about getting everything ready and the soil preparation and everything else, then probably wait until they start coming up in the spring. But my tendency would be to go after them mid to late August through mid to late September. And
Should it be pruned back first?
Yeah, you can cut them because, they're just herbaceous perennials. But obviously don't cut them until you dig them up. Let the bulb, let the root system sit above the ground for a day or so just to dry a little bit, and then move it to the new location.
Okay. All right. Good man, they go a while, and I got to move them from where they are.
Well, that's great.
So, yeah, they take up a lot of space, so for just that spring bloom, and that's it.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, they do have that, maybe 12 to 14 days of really a nice show, and then it's foliage after that.
Right. Mm-hmm. I got a hydrangea plant that I put in the ground 5 years ago. It was a floral piece for my wife, and that thing is just covered with pink blooms.
Perfect.
It really goes going good. I'm going to feed it with that acid fertilizer.
Right.
So.
You're doing everything just right.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your program. I listen to it, and I really enjoy it and learn a lot.
Well, thank you. And speaking, just in general with the hydrangeas, they are spectacular this year. I mean, throughout the entire region, I'm really amazed by their ability. Why don't we go ahead and take a break? Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones, and let's head over to Scott's yard. Hi, Scott.
Good morning, Michael. I appreciate the depth and breadth of your knowledge on this subject. I've got a backyard that if it was a couple hundred yards longer, it would be about a blue ski slope. It's fairly pronounced. It's fenced, has a dog that loves to run in it, but grass cutting, trimming is a real pain. What would you suggest for green yet lower maintenance?
Is it sunny or shady?
A little of both, but primarily shady. Okay. There are some very large trees back there.
Probably what I'd try is just Dutch white clover. So okay. In other words, even though clover in theory likes to have more sun, the better, I'd give that a shot as opposed to trying something else, because traditional type ground covers in that scenario, it's going to cost a small fortune. And okay. Dutch white clover, you buy the seed, just make sure the seed is inoculated, and just kind of keep, you know, putting the seed out every fall and see what happens.
Is there has anyone figured out a grass that is like a dwarf? It only grows 2 or 3 inches tall and stops?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
And basically, a lawn of any type, even the shady spot mixes, in that scenario, is going to have a real difficult time.
Well, I don't, maybe I miscommunicated. I don't really want a lawn. I just want it green.
Right.
Because getting back there with a mower and a trimmer, I feel like I'm hiking Mount Everest.
Right. No, I understand. That's why I said the clover, because the clover only gets about 4 inches high. And then the flower goes above that.
Excellent. Michael, thank you so much. Have a safe week.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's head over to Tom's yard. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mike.
Yes.
Yes, I've had two false aralia plants, and they both died on me. They were the kind with the long, narrow, skinny leaves.
Right.
I was wondering if I was using, if my water's too hard or what's going on. I waited till the till it got dry before I added water.
Well, now are you growing them in pots as a houseplant, correct?
Yes.
Right. So basically, I mean, they're not an easy houseplant to grow. They need to be in really bright light, even though they have narrow leaves and everything else. So if they have bright light, just wait until the potting mix shrinks away from the inside of the pot, so you see a slight gap between the potting mix and the inside of the pot, and water them thoroughly at that time.
Okay. Is there anything else? Like, do I keep them in out of the direct sunlight, or
if they're if they're outside, you know, on your patio or your deck, definitely don't put them in the sun. Put them in a shaded location. But if you're leaving them inside, just bright light is about all they really need.
Okay, I thought maybe my water was too hard, or
no. I could create it, but generally, if it's a water factor, you're going to see some like white crusty stuff on the top of the potting mix, which indicates, let's say, the pH of your water is really high, so it's kind of salty. But for the most part, and are you fertilizing?
Yes, I put the sticks in there, the fertilizing sticks.
I would probably not use the sticks and just get a powder type thing that you mix in water and fertilize that way.
Okay. Yeah, the leaves were just falling off like crazy.
Right. It's not an easy house plant. Let's put it that way. The way you can know that is you don't see it that often for sale.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind. Thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go to Marlene's. Hi, Marlene.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I have a question about my little lilies that are in the front yard. They're a small yellow lily. It's a lady's name, and I can't bring it to memory right away. Do you know what I'm talking about? You see them all over the place. They rebloom every year.
So are we talking day lilies?
No, it's not a day lily. It just blooms every year. But it doesn't bloom for a whole, it blooms longer than a day. It's got a lady's name to it.
Hmm.
Anyway, after they bloom, they leave a hard little shell on the bloom where they were. I wondered if you should fertilize those every so often to get them to bloom again more frequently.
Generally, I mean, are we, if we're talking the Asiatic lily, so in other words, it has a stalk?
No,
and then...
it's not an Asiatic lily. Yeah, it has a stalk and it has lots of leaves. It comes back every year. I've had them in the same area for years.
Hmm.
You can't think of the name of it. I'm surprised you don't know what it is. I know it's a woman's name. All I can remember about it.
Well, the thing that came to me was Stella Dioro, but
That's it. Stella Dioro.
Well, that's a day lily.
Oh, okay. Well, it seems like it blooms longer than one day, though.
Well, they don't. Day lilies doesn't mean it only blooms one day. It's relatively short. That doesn't have anything to do with the length of the bloom.
Oh, okay. Just relatively short.
Right.
But that's exactly what it is. So should I fertilize those to get them to bloom more? And they multiply, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, they're invasive. They have the yellow flowers. And you probably, if the foliage and everything looks healthy and you're getting the blooms, certainly it wouldn't hurt to do a little bit of fertilizing. But additional fertilizing is not going to mean that you're going to have an extended period that they bloom. But the whole concept behind the Stella Dioro was it was going to be blooming longer than the classic daylilies.
Daylily, yeah, it's much smaller
right.
also. But it's very, very sweet. It tends to bloom more frequently early March when it just comes on. But
right.
now that it's kind of, they kind of die back. But should I cut those dried stalks off?
Yeah, the spent flowered ones, sure.
Spent flowered, yeah.
You don't have to. That's strictly a personal call. It's an aesthetic thing. It doesn't make the plant any healthier or anything else.
Oh, okay. Well, that was another thing. So just leave them alone and fertilize them like every month, huh?
Yeah. Well, basically fertilize them in the springtime. As soon as this foliage starts coming up out of the ground, fertilize them once then 30 days later, and then 30 days later. And then once we get into the summertime, you really don't need to fertilize them.
Okay. All right. Well, that's exactly what I needed to know. Thank you very much.
Certainly. My pleasure.
Okay.
And now let's head over to Keith's yard. Hi, Keith.
Good morning. I have this ongoing battle with voles in my backyard, and I've tried traps. I catch one or two, and it seems like five or six more come around and burrow around the yard.
You're doing about everything you can possibly do. I mean,
have you heard about these granules that you can use? They're kind of, I think they're like a castor oil base. I don't know if anybody's had any success with them, but these things are persnickety and they continue to tear up the yard.
Yeah, they can be really a heartache. So trapping is about the best thing you can do to try to get rid of them. Now, you see, you know where the vole holes are, right? They're basically kind of underneath shrubs and things like that. So, I mean, you could try some of these other things as far as you're trying to poison them, I'm assuming, with the castor bean type thing. And but you got to get it right into the hole where they're living, more or less.
Yeah, you're right. I've seen some holes like that. And then they come out right in the smack dab in the middle of the yard. I've read where you cut your grass short so they don't have the cover, and I've attempted that, but that still doesn't work.
Well, no, that doesn't work, and it also makes your lawn stressed, and it's going to make it so it's going to be problematic and from a different factor.
Good point. So, well, I guess I'm going to head back out to the hardware store and pick up some more mice traps. That's about the only thing that kind of works. But
right.
Like I say, you catch one or two, and there's three or four more to replace them.
Yeah. I mean, they're families. There's no getting around it.
I want to send them to somebody else's yard. Well, thanks for your service.
Sure, my pleasure. And we've got lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Why don't we go ahead and just take a break?
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones we go. Let's head over to Rick's yard. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Mike. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I have a question about planting tall fescue seed in my yard here in St. Louis City, about timing and just all, and how it would stand up here in St. Louis summers.
Basically, the fescues are the toughest grasses for our region because they're cousins to the native grasses for here. So September, late August, that's when the ideal time to be putting your seed down. Get a soil test done first to find out what's going on. That would be my advice. then go ahead and have core aeration done, spread the seed, then put compost, a quarter inch of compost on top of it.
And how long do you think that'll grow before the cold weather comes or whatever?
Well, it'll germinate, and it'll probably get maybe 2 to 3 inches would be my guess. Again, there's no way to know because you're going to have to do some additional watering if we don't have the rainfall and things along that line.
And then in the spring, that would come back, and would you put more seed down, or what do you say?
Yeah, I would say overseed every... Basically, the main seeding time is going to be in the fall, but overseeding, you know, in the springtime in May, late April, early May, would be something, would be a positive thing.
That sounds great. Thank you very much, Mike. Appreciate your service.
Sure, my pleasure. And let's go to Carrie's yard now. Carrie, how are you?
Good morning.
Hi.
I had a quick question. Well, a couple quick questions. I have some hostas, and I don't know if they were absolutely beautiful this year because of all the rain and cool weather we have this spring, or was it because last year I cut off stalks before they were able to flower? Does that make them healthier and stronger?
No, I mean, it has probably weather-related more so than anything. Hello?
I didn't hear what you said.
Yeah, weather-related is going to be the thing.
Oh, no, I think...
More so than their stalks.
The rain and the cool weather?
Yes.
Yeah, right now they're looking a little stressed.
Yeah, well, make sure they don't go through any drought stress. But
right.
Beyond that, they should still be looking pretty good, whether you let
They just get, when it gets this hot, they just can't handle the morning sun that they get, which is pretty intense.
Yeah.
And the other question is, I have some black-eyed Susans, which are absolutely beautiful right now. They're just gorgeous.
Right.
But do I want to fertilize them now?
No, not this. You want to fertilize them as they're growing. This late in the season, you may force some growth that they don't want to have happen. So just kind of leave them alone at this late.
Okay, just keep them watered.
Yep.
Alrighty, thank you.
Yep, and the next year when the black-eyed Susans come up, fertilize them at that time, and then fertilize them about once a month for two more times. And that should be more than
And they didn't bloom. They weren't gorgeous till late July.
Right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep. So that's, every year might be slightly different. Let's head over to Paul's yard now. Hi, Paul.
Hi there.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
There you go. I have some holly trees growing on a piece of property that I would like to transplant. And these are not bushes. They're tall trees. They stay green all year long.
Right.
They grow off the root system. Can I cut the root and the tree and transplant that?
You mean you're just trying to dig up the root without the top above ground growth?
No. So it might have a 4 foot or 6 foot tree growing off of it. Are there any seeds to a holly tree?
Basically, they're red berries, but to grow them from from the seed is going to be pretty tough. And to be honest with you, to dig a holly that's growing in a natural circumstance is going to be a really iffy situation for you, and you might be spending a whole lot of energy, mental and real money, and everything else, and end up with not much success.
Well, can you buy a holly tree?
Oh, sure. There's American holly and Foster holly both. Any retail nursery should have those.
And they're trees, not bushes.
Yes, they're trees.
Okay, I'll look that up.
Yep, so...
American holly?
American or Foster. American holly has a wider leaf. The Foster holly has a more narrow leaf. You need, if you want to have berries on them, you need to get one that's a male and one that's a female. And get a small male... planted in the same hole as a female. That way you wouldn't have one that wouldn't have the red berries on it later on.
Okay. Sounds like the thing to do.
All right, great.
Thank you so much. I've been listening to you all the time.
Okay, great.
25 years.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, it's the reason why I always say small male in the same hole with a female. I mean, the male will never have berries on it, but the female will kind of hide it. Because you're going to get a bigger male. I mean, bigger female. Let's head over to Eric's yard. Eric, how are you?
Hi, Mike. Thanks for your show. I've got a couple of questions. One of them was, I know you put some pre-emergence in the springtime, and is there a type of a pre-emergence? I've got a bag that's 0.38% Barricade 1906. Is that something you can put down for like the fall weeds too?
Basically, fall weed seed germination is going to be minimal. I mean, you could put it down, but I would say you're kind of wasting your money.
Okay, another question I had was, like, if I've got a humanus type of a bush and there's like one section about, you know, 2 foot by 2 foot in the lower part of it, that all of a sudden it doesn't have any leaves and it's sort of a deadish area, you think that's some type of an insecticide that's doing this? Insects?
Could be insects. It could be lots of different factors. It's probably just more so the weather and everything else and just the setting and the circumstances and shady more so than the insects, because insects generally just don't attack like that.
Yeah, because it's just one section in the lower one-third of the bush.
Right. I would say just cut that out.
Cut that out? It should grow back then?
Well, I don't know if it's going to grow back. If it doesn't grow back, then just get a same variety of a small plant and plant it in that one location and kind of hide the bare spot.
Okay. And you know, on that fertilizer, if I wanted to, I could just save that barricade for like next spring for putting that down?
Yes, right.
Okay, put that for the pre-emergence for next spring then. But because I thought I hear you talk about weeds and things like that that come out in August and whatnot too.
Yeah, there are some. There's cool season annual weeds and there's warm season annual weeds. And the cool warm season ones, you know, are the August germinating ones. So you can, if you have a history of that problem, if you don't have a history of those type of weeds, then, you know, putting it down is not going to do any good.
Okay. So best probably just not to do anything right now.
Right.
Okay. Thanks a lot for your service.
Sure. My pleasure. And several, Mary, Mark, Paul, Andrew, B, and sorry, folks, we're not going to be able to get to you today. But hopefully the Garden Hotline will be on next week. So this is the time of year where your cool season lawns are really been stressed out by the heat of the summertime and everything else. So just realize your bluegrasses and fescues worn out, but your zoysia is great. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline. I will see you next week.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer,
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait. There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.